This is Tom Shrewsbury with Reflections for the Covenant Network. In the past, we've often talked a great deal about the wonderful miracles performed by our saints and holy people, miracles that were investigated and approved by the Church and have shown very clearly the awesome power of God. But you know, miracles are not the works of saints alone. There are beautiful happenings that are taking place every day, and while the Church may not have declared them as true, verified, and accepted miracles, I believe they too can be examples of God's love for each one of us. Maybe it's how we use the word miracle. For example, we might say that it was a miracle we won that game last night, but that doesn't mean we're attributing that to God alone. But there are those special situations that appear beyond the normal, the everyday happenings that give us pause to stop and wonder. I think perhaps too often we take the power of God for granted. But when we take the power of God seriously, well, the results do seem downright miraculous many times. Case in point is EWTN, a worldwide television network that had as many as 400 million viewers worldwide during the final days of the papacy of John Paul II. It's almost impossible for us to realize that Mother Angelica started that network in a garage with only $200 in cash. And the events that followed, well, I could do a program on all of the, what I would call, miraculous events that made it all possible. But I would like to tell you about just one as an example of the power of prayer. Was it a miracle? Oh, I can't say it was, but I wouldn't take odds that it wasn't. Before Mother Angelica's debut into television, she and her nuns financed part of their order by making and selling fishing lures, and also by publishing small little books. You might call them prayer books or inspirational books that Mother wrote, which brought in a few dollars. And that's the basic background. But then came her dream of a Catholic TV network. As the network was developing, better equipment was an absolute necessity. The only trouble was to start adding the equipment, it would cost a lot of money. A lot of money, like $600,000 for just the basics equipment. Well, she didn't have the money, of course, but she did have faith and prayer. So she ordered the equipment with only a pittance in her checkbook and a world of faith in prayer. And then one morning she received a phone call from the trucking company that her order was in and would be delivered that afternoon. It would be delivered that afternoon, COD, with the amount of $600,000 due. Well, if she ever had to pray, this was definitely one of those times. And of course, that's exactly what she did. And it wasn't too long after that she received a phone call from a man on his yacht in the Caribbean. He had been reading one of her little booklets and had some difficulties in his family and was moved by her writing and thoughts and told her something to the effect that if she ever needed anything to call him. Well, she said she did need some money for this TV network she was starting, and obviously he inquired how much she needed, and she said $600,000. Well, I can only imagine, though, there must have been quite a pause in the conversation before he asked, well, how soon do you need it? Of course, her answer was simply, this afternoon. They talked for a few minutes more. The man asked the name of her bank, yet not long after that she received word that $600,000 had been wired to her account. And a few hours later, when her new television equipment arrived, she was waiting for the delivery man with a check for $600,000. Now, you can call that a miracle or a coincidence, but personally, in my book, that was a miracle. And incidentally, not the only one, as I said, connected with EWTN. But those are stories for another time. You could read about them in Raymond Arroyo's biography of Mother Angelica. I sometimes wonder in today's world how many messages we may be missing, and how many prayers are answered because we took the time to pray. We must recognize, too, that not every prayer is answered, and how impatient we humans are. Talking to God is one thing, but listening is another. And sometimes we better recognize that prayers aren't always answered right away. I want to tell you the story about a lady named Donna who lived in Pennsylvania and was married in the fall of 1976. Well, not too long after her marriage, she began to develop a serious throat condition. She would develop ulcers that would cover the inside of her mouth and would often extend to her throat and larynx. This condition would come and go and often result in severe laryngitis. Doctors at first considered the malady as a form of cancer, but medical specialists eventually ruled that out. One attack was so severe that she was unable to speak for almost 9 months. Doctors and specialists later concluded that there was no cure available. Well, time would pass. It would be 24 years later, and a friend told Donna about a new saint that Pope John Paul II had canonized as the first saint of the new millennium, Sister Faustina Kowalska. She gave her a biography of St. Faustina with a new prayer included in it called The Chaplet of Divine Mercy. In this booklet, she read about the promises that Jesus had made to Sister Faustina, including, and I quote, "My daughter, write that the greater the misery of a soul, the greater its right to my mercy. Urge all souls to trust in the unfathomable abyss of my mercy, because I want to save them all. On the cross, the fountain of my mercy was opened wide by the lance for all souls. No one have I excluded." End of quote. Then there was the phrase also promised to Sister Faustina, "I desire that the whole world know my infinite mercy. I desire to grant unimaginable graces to those who trust in my mercy." Well, these were just a few of the promises that were made to Sister Faustina on behalf of all of us in the entire world who would pay attention to his message for us through Sister Faustina. Well, Donna would learn more about divine mercy and St. Faustina, and she decided to ask for mercy for the suffering she was enduring through her chronic and incurable throat disease. She had heard about a shrine of divine mercy in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, which was not terribly far from where they lived, so she promised that one day she would make a pilgrimage to the shrine of divine mercy. But it was always sometime in the future. But she had a 50-mile round trip to work every day, and she would pray the chaplet of divine mercy on her way to and from work. Well, now it was well into the 21st century, and her disease finally had a name. It was called recurrent aphthostomatitis, or RAS. There was no known cause, and unfortunately, there was no known cure either. By the year 2007, her RAS had become even more severe, and it would also cover the roof of her mouth. This worsening condition would be preceded by stabbing pains in the roof of her mouth as well as her lower lip. In October of 2007, Donna decided that she had put off her pilgrimage to the Divine Mercy Shrine for too long, and this seemed a perfect time for her to go. She and her husband decided on the date, and as they were preparing to leave, she checked the shrine website and saw that a priest had died and was being buried that day, but they decided to go anyway. They had already delayed their trip far too long. Well, it was a perfect day with blue skies and fresh air, but as they were on their way, She felt the first jabs of pain in the roof of her mouth and in her lower lip. Another attack was on its way. However they had gone this far, they might as well tough it out. They reached the shrine, they attended the priest's funeral and prayed the chaplet of divine mercy, and were even fortunate enough to kiss a first-class relic of St. Faustina. All of this as sick as she was from another attack, feeling terrible and miserable. Before leaving to return home, they visited an outdoor altar used for Divine Mercy Sunday celebrations. It was very beautiful, and she took several pictures before leaving for home. Well, Donna had started driving because she thought that might make her forget the pain, but then all of a sudden, a little later, she suddenly pulled over to the shoulder of the road. Her husband thought she was feeling worse, but no, she was feeling better. She suddenly realized the pain in her mouth and lip was gone. For the first time, it didn't progress into a full-scale attack. It was absolutely gone. She was afraid to think she was cured, so she thought she would wait. She waited several months, and the months and weeks had come and gone, and no more attacks. She finally had the pictures developed that she had taken at the outdoor shrine and showed them to some friends who questioned the angel. "What angel?" she said. She hadn't noticed any angel, but clearly, as looking again, there was an angel at the shrine. Oh, it was not one of those "it looks like." It was not fuzzy or open to interpretation. It looked just like an angel. Well, she was confused, and a little later she met with her priest and showed him the picture and explained that she was now cured. He told her to return to the shrine and show them the picture. Donna also remembered attending the funeral of the priest while at the shrine and learned that he had died of a serious throat disorder and wondered if he had something to do with her cure. She would later say, "I've asked myself a lot of times, why me? I think it goes back to my promise," she would think, "to St. Faustina in 2000. I promised I would do all I could to spread the message of divine mercy, and she could use me to do with whatever she wanted. I would pray the chaplet, and I would come to visit her." Well, Donna would later offer this advice: pray the chaplet often, believe in the chaplet's power, and promise St. Faustina anything, but remember she will hold you to it. Donna publicly told her story on Monday, October the 5th, 2009, the feast day of St. Faustina, at her shrine in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Well, as I said, people often think accounts of miracles and miraculous happenings only occur to saints and holy people. But there are a multitude of beautiful events that have happened to us ordinary people. Oh, I'm not saying that every one of them is a miracle, but there are some things in heaven and earth that defy an exact definition. And we do know that God listens, and sometimes he gives us a nudge just to see if we're paying attention. For example, during the papacy of John Paul II, a number of stories are coming to light. We're all probably familiar with the story about his attempted assassination and the fact that he should have died, but that he survived. But what we may not know is that there was also another person who was bent on assassinating another pope. Only this time it was Pope Pius XII, way back in April of 1947. Then there was a man, an Italian man, named Bruno Conaciola, who was violently anti-Catholic, and probably his favorite activity was speaking publicly at any opportunity to defame the Catholic Church, the priesthood, as well as practicing Catholics. He was vicious, and he pulled no punches, and he harbored a burning desire to personally do away with the Pope. One day, as he was watching his children as they played in a field, he busied himself with pad and paper outlining another talk. Well, he had new reasons to hate the church, and he would write them down. And one could only imagine the combination of anger and satisfaction that he experienced putting pen to paper as he prepared his latest attack on the papacy and the church. But then something quite strange happened. Looking up, he saw his children had entered what appeared to be a type of cave, and he thought he had better check up on them. As he entered the cave, he was startled to see his children quietly mesmerized, looking at what appeared to be small light that was dim at first, but grew progressively brighter as the children seemed frozen in place, as they too focused on the light and giving the appearance of being in ecstasy. As he looked to the light, Mario was startled to see a woman standing in the center of the brightness wearing a luminous white dress with a flowing mantle, and she introduced herself with gentleness as the Virgin of the Revelation. And then she gently asked him a question. She said, "Why are you persecuting me?" The man who claimed to have all the answers suddenly had none. And then she gave him a special message that he was to deliver personally to the Pope, the man he had once hoped to assassinate. Well, we don't know what the message contained. We don't know what the Pope told him, but we do know that he met with the Pope, and we do know what happened to Bruno Carnacciola. He became a Catholic, and, oh yes, he would later become Brother Bruno. Then in May of 1990 in Mexico, a 5-year-old boy was dying from leukemia. The end appeared near. He had undergone massive treatments of chemotherapy, and his tiny body was reduced to little more than a skeleton. The mother heard that the Pope would be in Mexico on a visit, and one of his stops would be a scant 2 hours from the boy's home. Well, the mother decided to take the trip and the child with her to see Pope John Paul II. And he wasn't too thrilled with the child going because of his weakened condition, but the mother and the dying boy made the trip. They had a dove the boy was to release when the Pope passed, but as his plane landed, it appeared the Pope would be too far away. But through a strange set of circumstances, the Pope diverted from his scheduled path, and there he was right in front of the mother and child. She was holding the frail little boy as he freed the dove who flew heavenward. The Pope smiled and crossed directly to the little boy, and bending over, he smiled again and gently kissed the child's head, bald from all the chemotherapy. As the Pope continued on, the little boy said, "Mama, I'm hungry." His mother looked in amazement because for the past 2 weeks he had not been able to eat. And then he added that he wanted chicken. He would later recount that as the Pope touched him, he felt what was like an electric charge. Then he was examined again a short time later, and the doctors were shocked. There was no evidence of the leukemia. Today, he is a handsome, robust young man in his late 20s, anxious to become a successful engineer. A spokesman for the local diocese said, "I personally am convinced a miracle took place there." And then there was a sister, Ofelia Trey Palacio, who had been a nun for 50 years in Venezuela, whose superior offered her the chance to go to Rome. But Sister Ophelia hesitated because she was in such poor health and had suffered such bouts of dizziness and other maladies for the past 5 of her 70 years that she was afraid to travel. But the superior prevailed, and they went to Rome and were fortunate enough to be with a small group of sisters who were invited to be received by Pope John Paul II at Castel Gandolfo. Well, the Holy Father greeted each sister, and she was introduced to the Holy Father, Sister Ophelia, and she said, "My illness isn't letting me live. Please pray that it might go away." The Pope took her hand and said, "Pray." The Pope patted her on the cheek and smiled, and her dizzy spells instantly were cured. She would later recount that it seemed like the very hand of Jesus had touched her cheek, and she returned home cured and very happy that she came. Miracle? I don't know for sure, but it was a beautiful happening. But my favorite story about John Paul the Great comes from all places, Houston, Texas, where a Dr. John Lerma, who was a specialist at the Houston Medical Center Hospice, had a most unusual story that he would like to tell. It seems that back in the 1980s, a young girl named Sarah, who was 10 years old at the time, and had been blind since birth, had visited St. Peter's Basilica in Rome on an Easter Sunday with her mother. Sarah told how, as she was led into the basilica, she was drawn by a kind of vibration to her right, where she would be standing facing Michelangelo's Pietà. And while she was unable to actually see it, she claimed that the feeling seemed to be a part of her body, and she also had the sense of a tremendous love. And she also seemed to feel that something was pulling her, like unseen hands moving her, and she told her mother, "I think an angel is taking me someplace." Well, holding her mother's arm with one hand, while an unseen hand was leading her way down front to a pew, she would tell her mother that an angel said, "God wants me to sit here." Her mother just smiled at what she considered to be the musings of her daughter, especially since this was the front row and marked reserved for the mass that would soon take place. A priest in charge of the seating approached them. The mother held her breath, and the priest told them they could stay there and that they would be joined by a few other young people. And then the priest said that he would introduce them to the Pope after Mass. Though she was unable to see, Sarah claimed to feel an amazing warmth and peacefulness as the Holy Father entered the basilica and passed her on the way to the beautiful altar. And she claimed, too, that she could feel an amazing warmth and power from his hands as he blessed the crowd. And she also claimed that her angel held her hand throughout the Mass. And, as he had promised afterwards, the priest took Sarah and her mother and the other children and led them into a room where they were all seated. This time Sarah would say that her angel told her to stand because the Pope was coming. Now this is strange because the other children must have had angels too, because in unison all of the children stood up exactly at the same time as the door opened and John Paul II entered the small room. Sarah claimed that she heard the sound of angels, and her angel told her they were singing in reverence to the Pope, who visited with each one of the children. And then it was Sarah's turn. The Pope, in the prime of his pontificate, paused in front of Sarah and then reached out and gently hugged her, placing her head on his chest. By now, tears of happiness were streaming down her face, and some of her tears dropped on the Pope's fingers. Then he whispered in her ear, "My child, these teardrops hold the faith needed to heal you in ways you cannot imagine. God has sent an angel to guard you as you prepare to glorify him through a miraculous life." He would continue talking to her and said, "You will come to believe in an all-loving God. Like you, I could be healed from my ailments, but we are being asked to view suffering for its strength and not its weaknesses. You see, Jesus' plan is to bring all souls back home, but he needs the empowering innocence of children and their willful suffering to engender his design." And then he said, "Pray for understanding and wisdom, my child," and then added, "In the end, there will be a gift for her." As the Holy Father left the room, Sarah, although sightless, still claimed she heard the angel singing. But all of this was 20 years earlier, 20 years ago. Now we have a new pope, and now Sarah was 29 years old and dying from cancer, as she told her story to Dr. Lerna in the hospice, as her time on this earth was drawing to a close. She would write him a note to the doctor, a note so that all could share in the gift that she received. She had decided to suffer joyfully for those people who were far from God. She said a beautiful lady had visited her, saying that she was the Lady of the Pietà, where Sarah had visited in Rome so many years before. And as John Paul II had promised, she did receive a very special gift, as he had promised, and she wanted Dr. Lerna to know that she was able to see. And then she went on to explain that this gift was brought to her by the late Pope himself, and she would describe the encounter, saying, "He showed me my tears that still appeared to be on his fingers as they were in Rome. And when he rubbed them on my eyes, I was able to see infinitely more." She told the good doctor about the incredible angels with flowing robes who were with her, and even described to the doctor what he had been wearing when she saw him last, how his clothes looked, and even the colors. But most importantly, she added, "I was looking at the kingdom of God, and it was all worth it." So the story goes from Dr. John Lerna at the hospice in Houston. Would this have been a miracle? I'll just leave it up to you. But wouldn't it be sad to live in a world without hope and without miracles? After all, they are God's gift to us. But perhaps the better question might be, what is our gift for Him? Perhaps for some of us, that may also be a miracle. This is Tom Shrewsbury with Reflections for the Covenant Network.